c'est pour ça nous rassembler.
L'antéchrist arrive, on ne sait même pas où aller. Représenté par Jeff, mes descendants de Douané. Se protège ton accueil à UPI et NNR. C'est la panique totale, freestyle, le criminal. Y'a plus de justice que de hustlers. Qu'une époque triste, toxique. Et combien de cops, puff, give. La panique de roi démontrée, non dépendance au système. Qui aime la bête, n'en est jamais rassasié qui traîne. Étape de Jeff comme néophyte dans Babylon. Au sale minimum, plan aluminium. Sous les cadres qui m'étonnent. Esclaves qui vivent de rhum. Qui après minuit dans bam bam millennium. Si la vie est si belle quand elle précède la mort, les familles se réunissent, prient le ciel pour qu'elle apporte leur ange auprès de Dieu, moins les ailes au-dessus de la mort. Oh, là les ailes de Bordeaux, car trop de familles déchirées d'enfants battus, martyrisés. Je veux le pouvoir s'immiscer, puis je veux des noirs divisés. Peut-être frisky, tout n'est que si, si, tout n'est que si, vous l'êtes que si, bon, oui, si, là, en niveau, il en bat, et non, oui, si bien.
Maria, papa, silo, c'est pour ça nous rassembler.
Comme la peur des Antilles, mon clan brille en tant que les gens qui y ont anéanti le pouvoir d'autrui en 1804. Black and proud, the bitch vise les gens aptes à reconnaître qu'aujourd'hui c'est camouflé. Mais faut pas se soucier, car nous sommes associés. Yo, tu peux t'accoter sur moi si la charge est lourde. Un coup de main ou bien avant le compte à rebours, on part de haut. 1. Reconnais ta force, black ta rage, pense bien à où est-ce que tu es la mort. 2. Baisse jamais la tête, c'est la planète. Fais ce que t'as à faire avec de A à Z. 3. Reconnais d'où tu sors, donne beaucoup de support au crew qui pour toi se fout de la mort. À bout de tes forces, t'as besoin de tes alliés. Effacer le mal et aller devant le vent, c'est s'allier.
Maria, papa, silo, c'est pour ça nous rassembler.
Gè moun kap man ki m dega. Propos ou pa konen mwen te kon wè bo zon delma. Koto tap wè bon glou kokoye. Ou tap manje mango. Kounen pa kon kotoye. Mwen wè joun an glou. Sak pran. Mwen pas sa rekonèt aksan. Wop mache di betis ap fè nou miak pop san. Pa de franse gros klas l'ekol biye kriol montre. Fami la kay wop bien menè se kop la kap monte. Bouch ou senti. Wop bay menti. Haiti. Ou te kon manje kounen rete lanti. Pien sky plè ravet. Jes kom fè paret. Fagè kop fè naket. Chak jou manje farin ak let. Comprendre ma pensée.
Avancer, avancer.
Camper vite nous est ça que passer.
Avancer, avancer.
Ou comprendre ma pensée.
Avancer, avancer.
Haïtien.
Magie travail, blandine c'est comme les mavoles et magie chitaille. Yo tu m'as propre c'est pour m'tourner, pour m'tourner la caille. L'école m'est la vie c'est crée tes autres formes gars. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Magie j'ai travail, blandine c'est comme les mavoles et magie chitaille. Yo tu m'as propre c'est pour m'tourner, pour m'tourner la caille. L'école m'est la vie c'est crée tes autres formes gars. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Welcome back. Happy New Year. You're listening to La Rage du Peuple, 12 hours of special programming on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. It's about 1:08. We're well into our fifth hour of special programming. There was freezing rain earlier this morning, but it looks like it's cleared up a bit. It's 4 degrees, cloudy. A little slippery, but it's getting a bit more slushy and wet. You were just listening to Muzayan, a local band here in Montreal. Their anthem, La Vitenegue. And prior to that, we were listening to Patrick Ely, interviewed recently in the aftermath of yet another massacre in Cité Soleil by UN occupation troops in Haiti. Coming up next is another interview concerning Haiti with Jean Saint-Ville. Jean is part of the Haitian diaspora in Canada. He's based in Ottawa. He's a community radio programmer as well as an active member of the Canadian Haiti Action Network. And in this excerpt, because I did a two-part interview with Jean Saint-Ville, and unfortunately, live on air, I'll only be able to play one part, but on the upload, you could listen to both parts. In this interview with Jean Saint-Ville, I start with a question about Canada's responsibility to protect, which is why they justify their presence in Haiti. So here's the interview now with Jean Saint-Ville, which I did on December 20th, 2006, just about a week ago. Jean, the justification for Canada's role in Haiti by policymakers is a concept called the responsibility to protect. This is the same justification that is at least was used by the Liberals to justify Canada's role in Afghanistan. It's a principle that is being invoked to encourage international intervention in Darfur. I know you have very strong views on this principle, and I'm wondering if you could share them with our listeners.
Well, the responsibility to protect is being presented as if it's something new that came out of the discussions at the United Nations in 2000, and Canada is taking credit for having introduced this, and blah, blah, blah. It's all crap, man. Listen, I mean, when the Romans were invading other people's lands, they didn't say that we're going to go there to crush them, to kill them, to murder them, to steal their resources. They went in there to civilize the barbarians. When the United States was invading Haiti, Dominican Republic, Latin America, it was the white man's burden. Rudyard Kipling's poem, basically based on the racist principle that some people on this planet somehow have higher morality and higher a concept of governance, and therefore they're going to go to the lands of those who are not blessed as them to go and teach them how to govern themselves. This is for people who have, you know, very little in their brains, because anybody who looks at the history of the 500 years know full well that if the United States and Europe and basically the non-white people, the white people of the world today enjoy a lot of wealth, of plunder. That is, we have a history where Europeans have invaded other people's lands from Africa to Australia to the Americas, and stole their resources, murdered, killed a whole indigenous people from places like the Caribbean, have been extinct on the basis of bringing civilization to them. Of course, they never said they're going in there to steal the gold, to put on boats and send to the Queen of England and the Queen of Spain, the Queen of France, and all of these people. But we know that's what happened. That's what happens, and that's how today you have a disparity between the non-white people and the white people of the world. And that's how it is. And at the time, the term white that I'm using right now was invented by these very people who invented a biological thing they called whiteness, and they called it Christendom. Of course, today, with all the work that has been done to try to fight white supremacist racism, none of these states will come and identify themselves as white, or and that this is the basis on which they gang up on other people. But when you look at it today, and I say it with conviction, that the most dangerous thing right now in terms of threatening world peace is racism in international politics, because you have to be a hypocrite to pretend not to see that this is what's happening. When you see that in 2004, the President of the United States, the Prime Minister of Canada, and the President of France gang up together to kidnap the President of Haiti and dump him in the Central African Republic, I mean, there's nothing that expresses this racism at the international level more dramatically than that. And when you see that, to replace this president, they are working with an elite that is known for its racism inside of Haiti, a quasi-apartheid system in that country. When you see how they parachuted this guy named the member of the white Haitian clan to organize the theft of the elections in Haiti, you have to admit that we are not so far removed from the days where politics in North America and Europe was based on race. And so that responsibility to protect is nothing but a ploy to help the imperialist powers to continue the colonial system without calling it so. As you know, there are a lot of resources in Africa. All the coltan that people are using in cellular phones, etc., is found in the Congo. There's the diamonds of Sierra Leone. And all of these things, you know, a lot of resources of places like the Sudan and other places, if you can use the responsibility to protect doctrine to invade these people's lands and destroy the state in those countries on the pretense that you're helping them, what you in fact do is recreate the colonial system where the countries that have real power at the United Nations are going to be using the United Nations to invade other people's lands and resources. We have seen the use of this responsibility to protect in many countries already, and that's the fact that they had used it in Haiti, where people say that, well, there are no major natural resources in Haiti, would be the interest in Haiti. But people need to realize that policies that are invented and tested in one place in the world can be applied, because once they create a precedent, they can reapply it and also at the same time use the United Nations to cover it up.
Jean, this year, aside from an election in Haiti, there was also an election in Canada, and we now have a conservative government. The Liberals are obviously, I think the word might be, obsessed with the issue of Haiti. It seemed to me, at least, that for certain politicians such as Denis Paradis and Denis Coderre, Quebec-based Liberal politicians, Haiti was an obsession for them. Denis Paradis helped convene the so-called Haitian Initiative here in Canada that set the groundwork for the coup. I'm wondering if you can share with us your views on whether there's any difference in the Conservatives being in power. Certainly, the main thrust of Canadian foreign policy hasn't changed. But was there something personal about this for the Liberals? Was this a missionary mission by certain Liberal politicians? Or are there more structural issues here that unite the Conservatives and the Liberals?
Yeah, well, we're living in an age where you would see someone who had run for the Conservatives become a Liberal MP in Parliament and vice versa. So obviously we already see that there are not that many ideological differences between those two parties. And I might say it even with some of the other ones that are pretending to be even more progressive. No, I think it's more fundamental than that. You know, the countries in the world, and Canada is no different, are run by elites. And these elites, they develop ideologies because they went to the same schools and they have a paradigm from which they operate. And it's very difficult to find people who have grown up and in that system in North America who can see the world beyond those racist paradigms that you know, or concepts that they have internalized. And I would not be surprised that even some of those guys in the Liberal Party, when they were talking about, you know, the ability to protect, or like Denis Paradis talking about, you know, Haiti's population being a time bomb, you know, because there are just too many people. He was talking about counting how many Haitians were going to be alive in 2010 and calling that population a time bomb that needed to be stopped right away. Some of these guys actually, they say these things without seeing the way a black person from Haiti might interpret what they're saying. And they might even think that they are well-meaning. So this issue of a new government coming into power in Canada, I don't think it makes any difference in terms of how Canadian policy towards Haiti has been led. And as you can see, for instance, they kept the same ambassador, Claude Boucher, who openly went on the record, quoted in Embassy magazine, saying that there was supposed to be an investigation in Haiti on the government of Jean-Bertrand Aristide, and the ambassador, so-called diplomat, was quoted as saying, "We hope that the investigation is going to find him guilty of so many crimes." When talking about Jean-Bertrand Aristide again, the former president of Haiti, who's now exiled in Africa, he said that we hope that Aristide disappears and never come back. Obviously, the diplomat, if he was the Canadian ambassador to France, I don't think he would have ever said that about any former French president. And the reason is simple. I mean, people can try to sugarcoat these things, but I don't think my ancestors fought racial slavery all these years for me to be putting water in my mouth when I'm talking about people who are expressing themselves as racist. And the reason why Claude Boucher felt comfortable saying these things is because he knew there was not going to be any consequences. Because, as you can see, the situation in Haiti, as for the past 2 years, has gone from bad to worse. They removed 7,000 elected officials, replaced them by thugs. When the flood took place, there was no government really to do anything for the people, so thousands of people died. You know, of course, you had all kinds of, you know, statements that they're going to help Haiti, and anybody who did any verification realized that years after the flood, after all this talk, the people in Gonaïves were left to their own devices, picking up the mud in front of their houses with their own shovel. So all of this TV show about generosity and all of that was full crap. The only solidarity that took place was solidarity between the Canadian people and the Haitian people. There are people in the population in Canada who managed to collect resources, and these resources did get to the people of Haiti and did whatever good they could. But at the level of state, it is full hypocrisy because it was all politics that was being played. And so, you know, I don't think that the difference in government, you know, whether it's liberal or conservative, the only difference is that, of course, because the liberals are the ones who conducted the coup, they will have more reasons to try to hide things for their own record. As you know, Pettigrew, for instance, is someone who was targeted by militants in Canada, and his reputation is tainted, so people like that would come back and try to demonize the popular government party of Aristide and do anything to try to say that, well, you see, we did what we could and we thought we were doing right, etc. But other than that, I don't think that we can rely on the political system here in Canada to do good by Haitians. They don't have enough of a price to pay, because most people don't know, and the media here is not going to uncover uncomfortable truths about the illegal and racist policies that we have applied in Haiti.
Jean, in the campaigning by activists, a lot of issues were highlighted in the last 2 to 3 years. Political prisoners, killings, kidnappings. Of course, the very fact that Haitian people weren't allowed to exercise their own self-determination, the forced exile, the kidnapping, you could say, of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. A few months ago in the late summer, there was a report in the Lancet Medical Journal that revealed that during the 22-month period of the U.S. and Canadian-backed interim government in Haiti, the coup government, 8,000 people were murdered in the greater Port-au-Prince area, 35,000 women and girls were either raped or sexually assaulted. Now, without going over what we know has been exposed, has anything improved in the last year? Has the fact that Préval coming into power, and not so much him coming into power, but the fact that there might be more space for the Haitian grassroots, has that improved any of these issues that people have campaigned on, and of course the Haitian people themselves have experienced in the last 2 to 3 years? I mean, and for really hundreds of years, but we're talking now about the period since February 2004. What's your assessment of what's happening on the ground right now?
You know, Preval has created space for some people to breathe. For instance, there were exiles who had come back and tried to reorganize the political party, especially the Lavalas party. I think that the election of Preval had avoided an application of the plan, which was to basically just wipe out Cité Soleil and Bel Air, the poor neighborhoods. I think that if we had more of La Tortue and the direct puppet government in place, we might have seen more massacres in the poor neighborhoods. But this is all speculation. I cannot know for sure. However, this space is not a space that is well consolidated and that is well protected. The country is still not under the control of Haitians, and even the president himself admitted that. Preval, you know, mentioned the fact that, you know, he was being told to work with the guy who is the head of the police. Now, if you know anything about the structure of governance in Haiti, you know that, you know, the head of the police is a very important person, a very important position, but also a person who is a clear employee or subaltern of the president. Now, the president is admitting openly that it is what they're calling the international community, which is a code word for the United States and its appendages, basically telling him that you have to work with this guy. You have other situations where the Prime Minister, Jacques-Édouard Alexis, was openly threatened last week by the U.S. Embassy, saying that he has to accept the deportees coming from the United States because the United States has now decided that they're going to give, as a gift to this government, 100 deportees a month, which, of course, Haiti cannot deal with. We just don't have the infrastructure for that. But all of these gestures show that the government is not in control. There are people who are arrested, and they cannot be judged. I gave the example of Michael Lucius, who is the head of the judicial police, who is, of course, very close to the United States Embassy and stuff like that. And they cannot judge him. So, you know, things have not deteriorated at the level that it could have wasn't there for the poor people. But it could also be just a matter of time because the pressures are mounting, as you could see from that letter coming from the Table de Concertation, and they're coming from all over the place. You have Yuri La Tortue, who is the nephew of Gérard La Tortue, a guy who is known in all circles to be at least very shady, and, you know, was involved in the military and was called Mr. 30% because that's the kind of bribe that, according to Le Figaro, he was asking. Even his own uncle was afraid of him when he was prime minister, you know, de facto prime minister. And this guy has been pushing for the return of the military in Haiti and now is enjoying the title of senator. So, you know, all the elements, all the thugs, like the Gisilip gang that was funded by the CIA in the Dominican Republic and armed to come and conduct the coup in Haiti, all of these guys are roaming free in Haiti. And Preval cannot, or I don't know if he cannot, but anyway, he has not done anything to arrest these people. Instead, he's merely trying to say that every time they tell him that he has to disarm the people from Cité Soleil, he's saying that, well, you know, the disarmament is going to be general and everybody will have to disarm. But, of course, there's not one of the bourgeois-led gangs that are disarming. So it's just not happening.
Jean, we're calling our New Year's Day programming La Rage du Peuple, and you know, we're looking at struggle, social struggle in the long term, understanding that struggle is about that long term, the long term fight. And I'm wondering if you can just share with us in closing your perspectives on the struggle ahead on this particular issue, the issue that you've talked about relating to Haiti, which of course
interacts with so many other issues in terms of globalization, capitalism, imperialism, wars abroad, racism. What are the challenges that Canadian activists, Canadian organizers working in solidarity with Haitians on the ground, what are the challenges that we face this year? What are the issues that we should be targeting? What do we have to look forward to in terms of our struggle in the coming year?
Yeah, well, I am excited with what has happened the past 2 years right here in Canada in terms of the Canada-Haiti Action Network building up and connecting with other activists when we went to the World Social Forum in Venezuela, etc. And one of the things I think is capital is for us to go over the barriers that are put in front of us, such as the media distorting reality for us, presenting us peoples in occupied or in faraway lands as, you know, helpless, needing our charity and unable to do for themselves. That's not the reality. People all over the world are struggling and are looking for genuine solidarity. And what also people need to realize is not this hatred of white people all over the planet. That's not true. It is simply not true. That's mass hysteria. Myself, this was in Egypt, a Muslim country, and I could see it. People were there living their lives and trying to get away from poverty. But what they don't accept and what they resent, and we can understand why they do, is the pretense that foreigners run their countries for themselves. And I think one way we can get away from this racist paradigm is for people to have people-to-people interaction. And I have been fortunate to see how this transformation works. For instance, with colleagues, comrades in the Canada-Haiti Action Network, who some of them were not even militants. You know, people were growing up in very conservative families right here in Canada. And when exposed to the truth about what's happening in Haiti, beyond the hype of what the politicians are putting forth in on the TV screens to as garbage, really, to contaminate our minds, these people buy a plane ticket and they go to Haiti, and on their own they meet those people. They meet those people who they were told are angry or are full of hatred and are chimeres, which they call, you know, the mythological monsters, you know. And they meet these people, and they realize that these people have the same aspirations that we have here in Canada. They want to spend money to send their kids to school. They want to have health care. They want governance that is responsible, accountable to them, and not to the U.S. Embassy and the Canadian Embassy and the French Embassy. These people, what they're asking for is nothing than what we are asking for ourselves right here in Canada. And so I think what we need to look forward to is the fact that this globalization of evil, well, it could also open the door for true people-to-people solidarity. And people need to just buy plane tickets and don't believe the hype. Go to Haiti, but don't go to a resort in Haiti. And when I use Haiti, because that's what we're talking about here. But, you know, the situation that we have is the same in the Dominican Republic. It's the same as you go to Jamaica. It's the same as you go to a lot of these places where they create these resorts so that a tiny minority of the human population can go and enjoy the beach and be served by the natives. We need to be ashamed of ourselves if we fall for this trap, because we know full well that on all of these islands that the populations are starving, and then they're not there to serve us. We're no longer in a colonial period. So what needs to happen is for people to just, you know, get out of the resort and go meet the real people, talk to them, and don't hand them 25 cents or your used T-shirts. When you come back to Canada, you open your TV and you see World Vision and whatever, you know, telling you that, you know, with $3 you can do this, and it's like you can buy yourself a child for $3. This is despicable. That's not what you want. What we need to be doing is to make sure that the governments of these countries have money, have budget, from the resources of their countries, of their people, so they can have education systems, they have healthcare systems, not to have NGOs of good Tarzan or good Sekhlaz coming in the natives' land and saving them from themselves. That's the racism that we need to face. And once we do that, we will realize that the world is not half as dangerous as they're trying to make us believe that it has to be. And we will not need to have our young people going to die in faraway wars that these elites are telling Terry, when in reality it's not true. Because they're telling us that our way of life is threatened by the barbarians. Well, that's, as far as I know, I haven't seen any barbarians invade Ottawa. All I see is that we are using our young people to go and invade other people's lands where we have no business being, and then claiming to be the victims. And when you look at the reality, is that the people that are being terrorized today are the people of Iraq, the people of Afghanistan. They are the ones that are being terrorized. We are not. So we cannot pretend to be the ones who are the victims there. We need to stop and face reality.
Jean, thank you for joining us as part of La Rage du Peuple on CKT Radio.
All right, brother. I appreciate it. And keep the struggle going.